And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive off and running here on a Friday as we are broadcasting live from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nikhale Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, the Constable Chase McCabe back in the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet.
So
gentlemen.
So you would say he's back in the studio by himself and with himself and his thoughts, maybe?
Yeah, in a black and white picture, posing, pondering his existence.
Contemplative constable.
Yes.
I just want to go back to sleep, to be honest with you.
Go back to bed.
I'm minimal. Maybe
I think all the Preds agree with you.
And maybe the Preds will go back to bed as well.
Did they
not
ever
a good
wake
one
up?
Last night. What's that?
Did they ever wake up?
Yeah, that would be assuming that they actually woke up. So, All right, that's two shots now, kicking people while they're down. I don't know if we need to do that anymore, but we got that out of the way.
We did. As the Jets win 5-1 last night, and now you start to wonder, and we'll think about this big picture with this team, with the matchup against Winnipeg, but last night, one of those games where really you start off, and it felt like it was back and forth first period. There was a beautiful wraparound goal. I don't know how Lemieux snuck that puck past Pekka, but then you have the challenge by Laviolette, which ends up being really good, take a goal off the board. Arvidsson continues to do what he does, but then after that, all Winnipeg, they roll 5-1.
Yeah, and if you look at the games that this team has played, now you take the regular season meeting out this year, what was it, 3-0 earlier in the season when the Preds played very well, and they gave up 5 goals, they lost 5-1 in Game 7, they lost 6-2 in Game 5 at home. That's 6 goals there. They gave up 4 in a win in Game 2 and gave up 4 in a loss in Game 1. Mm-hmm. And even Games 5 and 7, which didn't look close on the scoreboard at all, at the end of it all, it was a 13-3 thrashing. No pun intended there for the Winnipeg Jets. I think, you know, it felt the same as those games, where it felt close, it felt even, it seemed like it was a game. We were in it. This team's in it. It seemed back. Okay, it's a one-goal difference. And then you kind of look up, and midway through the third, you're going, oh, my, how the hell did this become a three-goal deficit? And all of a sudden, it's a four-goal deficit, and you're just looking up at the scoreboard going, man, we just got our butts kicked. So it felt very similar to Game 5 and Game 7 in Bridgestone last year. Nothing like the matchup they played earlier this season where the Preds, in Week 1, I think, were just clearly really fired up and motivated.
Let me ask you this, Derek. As a former player, when you have these big-time rivalry games, great against great, a lot of anticipation, a lot of energy, and you come out and lay a stinker, does that kind of linger with you moving forward? Like, how do you explain when you have all this buildup and then it just fails to live up to the expectation?
There's no explanation because this is the one game. We talked about it yesterday. This is the one game that you have to get up for. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, this is a game where you know ultimately at the end it means something for later on because you're going to have to face this team in the playoffs more than likely. You're going to have to face this team in the playoffs. And in order for you to get to the Stanley Cup or them vice versa, you got to go through one another. Mm-hmm. And for you not to come out and play one of your best games or at least have the energy, it's inexcusable. It really is. And yesterday, watching the game, it never seemed to me, now this is me, it never seemed to me that Winnipeg was out of control. It never seemed to me that Winnipeg was in any position to lose that game. Once they got up 2-0, even when Victor scored that goal, you just thought, okay, Winnipeg, they still got control of the game, and now the Predators are playing from behind. They're reaching, they're grabbing, they're trying to do some, they're trying to just go that extra mile just to get up or just to tie the game. And then, because you had, when you have, it's like when you're playing a game and, you know, you're going back and forth and it's heavyweights, and then you have two guys or a guy that's your fourth string wide receiver, and he ends up beating you for 2 touchdowns, and the defense is looking, and you're looking as if, like, wow, after all this, the fourth string wide receiver is the one that scored the 2 touchdowns early. Mm-hmm. Now what are we going to do? because the good players hadn't even got going yet.
Yeah.
And that's the way it seemed. The fourth liners were the one that scored both of their goals. And it just seemed like the front liners, once they start to roll, this thing was going to be over.
Well, Winnipeg's all five of their goals were from, quote, role players. This wasn't Wheeler or Laine or Connor or Scheifele. I mean, there was Lemieux and then a bunch of other role players. And I didn't even know there was a Lemieux on Winnipeg. I'm thinking, what is it, Mario Lemieux? Is that Claude Lemieux? Oh, no, this is like little Lemieux. I don't even know who this guy is. But they get five goals. Now, two numbers that stand out to me. Preds are now 2-4 at home in their last six games against Winnipeg. And 6-4-1, that is the record of Winnipeg the last 11 total games prior to the postseason last year. So that factors in this year.
So regular season meetings.
Yep. Just everything. So that would be two this year, the seven in the postseason, gotcha. And then the two before the playoffs.
So 6-4-1. I mean, listen, Connor Hallebuyck was great last night. You got to give him a credit too, 37 saves. And it doesn't – you know, you don't like seeing quotes from a goaltender where he's like, yeah, I like this rink. Good memories here. And you're like, whoa.
That reminds me of Jeff Fisher saying, this is our second home when you talk about Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there you go. Marcus probably agrees.
I'm talking a long time ago. This is Jeff Fisher said that a long time ago when we played Jacksonville.
And listen, I mean, like he has been excellent in this postseason series last year and then last night. And, you know, did he outplay Pekka in the first game this year? No, obviously not. The Preds won that game. And this is also the most important thing to take from all of this. And we talk about this all the time on, all right, what happened last night with the Preds? How important is it a 160-minute game in a season where you're going to play thousands and thousands and thousands of minutes? Like, what can we actually take from it? And if we went back and said, well, the 3-0 win doesn't count at all and the 5-1 loss doesn't count at all, then that's fine, but you have to sort of count them all evenly and say, listen, you can't get too high for a win and you can't get too low for a loss. And so what matters is, how does this series look? Like you said, let's extrapolate it out. Look at the last 10, 11, 12 meetings. The Jets have been the better team. The Jets were the better team in the postseason. They're different teams today than they were last year, both of them. So it's important to note, this is not an indication of anything that's going to happen in the postseason. It's concerning that you're seeing some of the same issues that took place in the postseason, but by and large, it's just another regular season game, and it should be treated as such. We'll look at the season series at the end of the season and say, what were the five games? What was the record this year? And we'll look at that, and then we can start to look at trends and stuff like that. But this doesn't mean they're not going to beat Winnipeg in a series
but
in the postseason. It doesn't mean Winnipeg's going to win a series. It doesn't mean that much.
Well, before we get to the playoffs, you got to get to the trade deadline. Does this mean a bigger indicator that you would need a win?
Yeah, Simmons? It does.
Yes.
It really does, because you have to. You need, and this is what I said the other day, is, it's not necessarily get Wayne Simmons and we're going to the Stanley Cup. That's not what it's about. It's get Wayne Simmons to beat Winnipeg. And I don't think anybody wants to admit that we are one guy away from beating one team. I'm not saying beating it. Now, if they don't face Winnipeg, great. They don't need that type of guy. But you know, down the line, you're going to have to face this team. So why not admit this is the guy that we need in order to beat this team? Because if we don't get him, if Winnipeg gets him, it's a wrap. I can't see the Preds beating them in seven games if he indeed goes to Winnipeg. So you get him to beat Winnipeg, not to get to the Stanley Cup. Now, if it ends up being
in any matchup,
exactly. If it ends up you and Winnipeg are in the Western Conference Finals, then great. But you get one guy to help you beat one team, so then now you can go further.
One of the things I thought really stood out, Robbie Stanley put out a tweet that makes total sense to what you're saying. And if you think about it, he says, here's the quote. One thing that has been true so far tonight that was also true during the playoff series last year, the Preds have to work so hard against the Jets to get to the middle of the ice or win a puck battle. The Jets' size advantage shines through. Those are two things that I think Wayne Simmons would help. Again, I'm not all in on Wayne Simmons, but after watching last night, I think it's more apparent than ever.
The Preds have one dog, and y'all know when I talk about dogs, it's those guys that want to do the grimy, the guys that just don't care, the guys that are going to come after you time in and time out. That one guy is Victor Arvidsson. They need more dogs, and then And to me, Wayne Simmons would be that extra dog that they need.
Plus he has size.
Exactly. That's going to get in the middle, that's going to muck things up and make it easier for the guys outside. Right now, to me, they got one dog and he stands at, what, 5'7"? But he plays like he's 6'4". But you need more of him. It can't just be him every night. It needs to be your guys that are 6'4", 6'5". We understand the skill part. You have the skill part. Get in the middle and muck it up. Be a big guy.
You are spot on, Derek. They need a body. Hal Gill sat down at the table last night and was like, they need a body. That's what they need. They need a big-bodied guy, and that's Wayne Simmons. And he's got tenacity and is not afraid to stand there in the middle and muck it up.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll open up the phone line, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And again, you kind of keep somewhat in perspective the highs and lows of a season. Hey, 7-2 against the Capitals, you just pounded the defending champions, and then vice versa last night against what could be your nemesis out west, 615-737-1025.
Well, and even to go further into the Jets rivalry, listen, they had won 5 out of 6 at home against the Jets in the regular season prior to last night. So it's not like this team hasn't been found success against this team in the past. I think it's about what Derek's saying. I mean, the matchup is not a good one. That's why we felt bad about the matchup going into the series last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that much has changed, whether it's Austin Watson or acquiring Wayne Simmons. That I agree with Hal and Chase and Derek. Everybody seems to be on the same page here.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll take some calls. Also, you're going to hear from the head coach. You'll hear from the captain and a one-on-one with Craig Smith. That's all still ahead here on Morning Drive on ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
New Year's resolutions are hard, fellas, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we and my wife, we call them New Year's intentions. And getting an amazing deal, you should have an intention to get an amazing deal during the Xfinity New Year New Deal. That's easy. Now, through February 3rd, get started with Xfinity TV and Internet for only $35 each a month for 2 years when you bundle both with a 2-year agreement. You get download speed of up to 150 megabits per second, plus you'll get Stars and Showtime included for a year. With Xfinity, you can use the X1 voice remote to quickly find and watch your favorite shows on Netflix, Amazon Prime Video, and more. And watch your watch your favorite shows, movies, and even live television, of course, on the wonderful and spectacular Xfinity Stream app with the most reliable internet. This sale ends February 3rd, so seriously, guys, learn more about the Xfinity New Year New Deal today. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit your local Xfinity store. Requires EcoBill, paperless billing, and auto-pay enrollment. Restrictions apply. New X1 starter double play customers only. Actual speeds vary. Equipment taxes and fees, including BTV and RSN fees extra and subject to change. After agreement, term and premium promo regular rates apply. Netflix and Prime Video streaming memberships are required.
And welcome back to the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at Kitchen Notes inside the Omni Nashville Hotel. Mikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. The Preds fall last night 5-1 to the Jets. Let's get to some of the main contributors. Let's hear from the voices that matter. We begin with the head coach, Peter LaViolette, when he was asked last night if the Preds were outworked.
Well, they were quicker. I thought they capitalized. I thought they did a better job of generating quality chances. It seemed, we got in the offensive zone. Our shots didn't get through. We didn't do a good job of taking his eyes. We didn't generate the chances from the areas that we need to generate them from. So for me, they capitalized on their chances, and I thought that we needed to do a better job generating our chances.
Peter LaViolette last night. You know what's funny too is I feel like, and not that Lavi's wrong in this instance, but sometimes I think when people talk about hockey, it's when you lose a game like this, it's, oh, they were outworked. Sometimes it's just a bad matchup. Sometimes it's just poor execution. And I think more often than not with Winnipeg, it's a bad matchup for this team.
Well, yeah, it's a bad matchup. But I think the things that you are able to get away with other teams, you can't get away with versus the Winnipeg Jets. It's like some things you're able to get away with playing Jacksonville, but then when you play New England, you can't get away with those same things. And I think it happens to the Preds sometimes. The things that are able to get away with some of these teams that they are just superior over, they can't necessarily get away with them against Winnipeg because the separation between those two teams are the smallest of things. You know, not hustling to a puck, a turnover here, you know, being, you know, in the penalty box. Those are things that, you know, if you're playing another team, you might be able to overcome it.
Not converting a power play.
Absolutely. Not converting a power play. You can't overcome stuff like that consistently when you play the Winnipeg Jets. And vice versa for Winnipeg. If they were to do it, they couldn't necessarily overcome it against the Nashville Predators. So it's not, like you said, it's not that this team just is so much better than you. But when two teams are so evenly matched, it's the little things that maybe we don't see but happens in a game that separates. Once they go back to the film room, they look at it and say, you know what, if we had done this. But then if we had done this and we had done this continues to be a consistent thing, then something's wrong.
Well, and sometimes there's two things I would add. One, I agree the teams aren't that differently matched from a talent perspective. But I do think that a lot of times when you look at football games, you sometimes have to look at the other team and go, oh, they all make millions of dollars to play football too. Mm-hmm. Or when a great offense gets stopped by a great defense, sometimes you're like, what's wrong with the offense? The coordinator was terrible. The quarterback wasn't good. Well, sometimes the other guys are just better that day. The defense was just they're great players on defense too. And you have to just say, listen, they're a first place team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year. They might just be the better team. I mean, the Predators are more talented than almost everybody they face. The Jets might be more talented. It just might be a better team. It doesn't mean you're not going to beat them in the playoffs in a 7-game series, potentially. It doesn't mean you're not very closely matched with them and that you can't win. But you just got to sometimes, you know, a lot of times we look at football games and we go, well, did we lose the game or did they win it?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the outcome is very different, right? Like sometimes you can say, well, they lost it. They made mistakes. They turned the ball over. They did this. They did that. And I think sometimes you can look at your own team and say, well, we made mistakes. We lost it. Or we won it. We made plays. And look, Connor Hellebuyck played great hockey last night. Sometimes you have to just tip your hat to somebody else that might just be as good or maybe even a little bit better and just say, hey, you know what? They did the job, and they get paid millions of dollars to play hockey too, and you just have to give them credit. The other thing is, and we were talking about the matchups, and I think the biggest takeaway might not be I think you guys are right to focus on Simmons, and I think everyone who thinks that they need another dog that stands in the crease and really gets dirty, I agree with all of that. I think the more concerning thing about the matchup with the Jets is sort of what Lavi was talking about there. Their ability to get scoring chances on the Predators' defense is not something Wayne Simmons fixes.
True.
Or another big body fixes on offense. It may help with back checking and you know, playing defense. That's fine. But Ellis and Yossi aren't all of a sudden going to be like 6'4" maulers, you know, in the playoffs. Okay, like that group has to be better against a bigger, stronger, more physical offensive set of forwards, and that's not going to be solved by going and acquiring an offensive piece. You have to be better on defense in your own zone, which is what I thought cost them in the series last year. It wasn't necessarily their offense. They scored a bunch of goals in that series. It was about the defense, and the best defense they played in that series was probably Game 4, right, where they withstood a lot of stuff against Winnipeg in Game 4 up in Winnipeg and ended up winning that game. The defense has to be better for the Nashville Predators, and that is not something that is going to be solved by acquiring a forward in a 7-game series against Winnipeg. Your defense core has to be better, and your goaltender has to be better.
All right, let's hear from the captain, Roman Josi. He was asked last night where this team stands against other top competition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a big game for us. They're right in front of us. They're obviously a great team in our division, and it was a big game for us. And we're definitely not happy with the result, but we got to learn from it.
You know, I was just thinking about this driving in this morning. There's a part of me, like sometimes when you think about sports, you think about it with your head, you think about it with your heart. It's kind of the same way you approach when we do our picks. Well, my head says this, but my heart says that. Like my heart says I would love to go right through Winnipeg in the postseason and kick their you-know-what. But my head says, you know what? I've got no problem if somehow we avoid them in the postseason on the route to a championship. We talked about this yesterday.
What about the gut, though? What about the gut? Because I've got a pretty large gut now. It's getting bigger and bigger every day.
It's expanding.
My ever-expanding gut always has a vibe or a feel. Can you pick games based on a gut feeling? Right?
Does your gut bubble?
Yeah.
Does your gut bubble?
Occasionally.
Well, if it does that.
It's not the bubbliest of guts on the show. There's another one of those. But my gut gets a lot of picks right. You know, it feels pretty good about some picks. And listen, I'll say this. I'm with you, Nick. I don't want to see the Jets in the playoffs. It's almost a certainty, though, at this point. If the Preds make the playoffs, they're going to have to play Winnipeg, and this time probably 4 out of 7 in Winnipeg. But I also don't know if this one outcome indicates or dictates what's going to happen in that series. But I also think they're in a better situation this year to face them. I don't know if Winnipeg is as good this year as they were last year. And I think the idea, the thought of going into that series, just think about the vibe of that locker room. If they have beaten Colorado, let's say, or whoever they beat in the first round, and they're going into a second-round matchup against Winnipeg, don't you feel more comfortable about the matchup this year than you did last year? Because of the mental side of things, like, they will be so driven and focused. It doesn't mean they're going to win, but I feel more comfortable about the matchup this year, whereas I think they might have overlooked them last year.
But you know what scares me is if somehow you do get past them in the second round, being exhausted physically and mentally to get up for the conference finals against Vegas, sure, or whoever else.
Well, it cost Winnipeg last year. Right. I mean, they couldn't beat Vegas because Vegas outplayed them.
Yeah, it can happen. Do you want to avoid them? I mean, I'm sure Winnipeg probably doesn't want to play the Predators. I mean, the road to the championship, you want to have the easiest road to the championship as you possibly can. And if that means you don't play – you know, one of the toughest teams out there, then great, so be it. Let somebody else beat them and let us, you know, play that team that beat them, and now they're beat down and we can, you know, move on. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that's what happened in Winnipeg last year. They played a Predators 7-game series. Both teams are beat up. They move on and then lose to Vegas in that fashion. So, but I just think sometimes certain teams, we always say styles make fights, but then certain teams you have to, if you don't get up on them early, you start to press and you start to think about every little thing that you're doing. If they get up on you early, then it's that here we go again mentality. It's that now we got to start reaching. Now we got to start doing things that normally we don't do. And they got to find a way to not fall behind 1-0, 2-0, 2-1. Because when they do, when you're playing a team like that, you start to press. You start to try to do a little bit more than what you should be doing. So it's will they beat Winnipeg in a 7-game series? Will Winnipeg beat them in a 7-game series? I don't know. This game is not the end-all, be-all. We talked about it yesterday. You know, if you win, don't get too high and say, oh, we're there, we've arrived, we're going to beat them in the series. But if you lose, don't get too low and say, oh, here we go again, we're not going to ever beat them. Well, it's just going to be difficult either way, you know, whether you go a 7-game series with them or not. It's going to be difficult when you play this team in the playoffs. So if you can miss them, that'd be great.
All right, coming up next, we transition to some volunteer talk as our man Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will stop by. We'll talk all things Vols, football, and hoops with him. That's coming up next, live from the Omni Nashville Hotel Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Starting to get colder out there, folks, and that means your home is working overtime to keep you warm. Listen, that's stressful on a house. It's stressful on home ownership, right? And it means things can break and go wrong, and you don't know when that's going to happen. You can't plan for it. This is where Spring Hill Heating and Cooling comes in. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling knows that most of us can't afford to just simply write a check out of savings or out of checking to take care of a big-time home repair because it's cold in the wintertime and your home's working overtime. Most people can't do that. This is why Spring Hill Heating and Cooling offers you 5 years, no interest for qualified buyers. You will not find a better value than what Spring Hill Heating and Cooling can offer you. Think about that. 5 years means 60 months. You do not have to pay a single penny of interest. Not one penny for 60 months. Think about that. It's a huge repair. It's very costly to fix your heater or your furnace or your house. And Spring Hill Heating and Cooling knows that most people can't do that. That's why they give you all types of deals to make sure to help you pay for your home. 5 years, no interest for qualified buyers. Again, 60 months, not one penny of interest. So if you have a big emergency, make sure you call Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Check them out, springhillac.com. That's the website. They're locally owned, nearly 2 decades of experience in Middle Tennessee. Please check them out, springhillac.com. Make sure they are your emergency plan when your house gets broken. Of course, springhillac.com, and make sure you tell them that Braden sent you.
All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here on this Friday. We're live at Kitchen Notes inside the Omni Nashville Hotel as we welcome in our man Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you guys.
Great to have you in. So let's start with, I was reading something yesterday from the Knoxville News along the lines of NCAA minor infractions, and the one thing that stood out, and I know you could probably get into this a little bit deeper, Philip Fulmer and then the Vols. Well, Philip Fulmer was involved with a practice, with a drill, coaching up a defensive lineman. The Vols had the self-reported, I believe it was a level 3 infraction, which is like a very minuscule problem. Nothing for Vols fans to worry about. But can you explain the whole thing and how it went down and what exactly that means?
Yeah, and I do agree. I don't think it's a major deal at all, described even as minor by UT's compliance. But Philip Fulmer is he's a regular at Tennessee football practice. He's out there very often. And in this particular instance back in September, he was involved in very brief either instruction or encouragement. Encouragement was one of the words used to describe it. But with a couple of players on the practice field, and he is not supposed to do that. So it was self-reported by Tennessee. And with stories like this, that's the key, is the violations being turned in by the school. The NCAA expects schools to turn in violations. And over the last 6 months, Tennessee turned in 8 violations from different sports, 3 of them in football. And, the most notable one would be Philip Fulmer here. But he is a regular practice. He is, of course, Tennessee's athletic director. And sometimes he has maybe some guests with him, some donors or people who support the athletic department. Sometimes he's there just watching. That's a regular occurrence. In this case, went a little bit too far, and so the punishment, by the way, was 5 days he could not attend practice, and he received further education, as did some others, on what is allowed and what is not allowed for non-coaches.
So, coaches being at practice, former coaches being at practice is not something that's new. It's not that big of a deal. Darryl K. Royal was at Texas practice basically every day for like 30 years after he retired from Texas. It's not that big of a deal, but I think what is how much is Jeremy Pruitt looking over his shoulder? Who's actually making the final calls on some of the bigger decisions that go into all of this, running a football program, Josh? Is there any concern at all for Vols fans that, listen, they trust Philip Fulmer, you know, implicitly, but is there any concern that there is, you know, not one voice that's at the top of this food chain at all? Or is that just, hey, Philip Fulmer's an asset and Jeremy Pruitt's using him to be helpful to the program?
Yeah, I think that last part is how it's viewed right now. And I would also still say that the honeymoon phase is going on right now with Tennessee football and maybe Tennessee athletics as a whole, but football's the key here. And Philip Fulmer is the boss. Now, we've talked about Jim Chaney being hired and other moves that have been made. The key there has been resources provided by Philip Fulmer, and approval has to be given, but he is giving Jeremy Pruitt what he needs to be successful from a financial standpoint. The coaching staff is making a good amount of money. Greg Fitzgerald was well paid as the strength coach, and now $1.5 million and rising for a new offensive coordinator. And Philip Fulmer is very involved. What will be interesting to watch is as time goes along and as expectations rise and maybe a little more pressure is there to succeed, how that is handled. If Tennessee's winning, then everybody benefits, I think. There will be credit that will be passed along. We actually took a call on our show earlier this week saying, hey, Jeremy Pruitt's not getting enough credit. And I think he's getting plenty of credit for some of the things that have happened. But I thought it was interesting that a Tennessee fan thought, hey, too much credit is being passed around to others, including Philip Fulmer, and not enough to the head coach, Jeremy Pruitt. As time goes along, that will be an interesting relationship to keep up with, because Phil Fulmer is very invested in getting football back, and he knows that Jeremy Pruitt is his big bet to make it happen.
Now, do you think a lot of that is because of, you know, yes, Fulmer and other people are getting the credit, but because of the talent hadn't materialized just yet, and Jeremy's in his going into his second year, so obviously he gets a full year now to really coach these young men up. And really, you get to see the fruits of the labor once the season get going. Do you think then he will start to get the credit based upon how his recruits do?
Well, that's going to be a big part of it because we heard so much during this past season about how his recruits were going to have a big opportunity to come in and help, right? So depending on how those guys play and how big of a role they play, I think we'll see a lot of them on the field very quickly. Several guys we've talked about, like Wanya Morris on the offensive line and Darnell Wright, if he does sign with Tennessee, which is the expectation, both of those players could start on the offensive line next year. And other players in this 2019 class will have a chance to help immediately. And then players like Bryce Thompson started this past year as a true freshman. He was brought in by Jeremy Pruitt. The schedule lightens up a little bit this season as well. You don't have a ton of gimme games, especially in the SEC. Tennessee still has a lot of work to do to be able to compete at a high level. But this upcoming year, and then certainly 2020, Jeremy Pruitt's third season, fans are going to expect a lot more. And a lot of that will be because more of his players will be out there on the field, and with his players will come higher expectations too.
Talking to Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, joining us here on Morning Drive. So, Josh, it's been a couple of days, but it's the first time we've had you on since the news broke about T. Martin coming back to Knoxville. I'm sure from a fan base perspective, you love seeing it, a guy who won a national championship a little over 20 years ago. But what kind of impact will he have, not only from a coaching standpoint, but a recruiting standpoint? And just how big of a move is this, big picture-wise, for the Volunteers?
Well, you are absolutely right. Fans are fired up and excited to have T. Martin back at Tennessee, as it had been talked about a few times, at least a couple of times in the past, especially 2012 when Butch Jones was hired. He talked to T. Martin, and it didn't work out. He decided to stay at USC with Lane Kiffin's staff then. For T. to come back, I think that's added to the conversation of Tennessee fans feeling like it's getting back to the quote, Tennessee way, with Philip Fulmer being in place, Terry Fair's on staff, T. Martin added to it, and T's a legend for what he did as a quarterback, winning a national title 20 years ago. So I think that helps with the overall mood of the fan base. The impact on Tennessee, I think it starts with recruiting. He's very well thought of as a recruiter, and Tennessee would love for him to maybe make an immediate impact. There's a highly touted wide receiver named George Pickens from Hoover, Alabama. He's been committed to Auburn, and Tennessee's pitch will probably be, hey, we've got a guy that came from the state of Alabama to Tennessee a little more than 20 years ago, come be a part of this offense. The exact role is still to be determined because right now Tennessee is over the allotment of assistant coaches. So what kind of movement is there? Who coaches what position? Jim Caney last week was not named the quarterback's coach yet, so he could do that. He could be involved with wide receivers, but David Johnson is currently still there as wide receivers coach. So that's all still to be determined. So the immediate impact, I think, Tennessee is hoping is on the recruiting trail, T being so well thought of there that he can help in maybe the 2019 class, certainly heading into next year, because recruiting for 2020 is already well underway as well.
Now, Trent, let's move over to the hardwood, the men's basketball. And the Vols had two big victories this past week, one over Florida, then obviously Arkansas. They have, I believe, Alabama up next. But let's talk about individual awards because now that Zion Williams is out of the picture for now and they don't know what he's going to do moving forward, how much is Grant Williams in the running for the Wooden Award? Because I know you have other candidates, R.J. Barrett, D.J. Glosson out of Kansas. He's having a phenomenal season. But what Grant Williams is doing right now, I think he's a man amongst boys, and he's proven that he's not only a guy that can play inside, but a guy that can shoot from the outside as well.
Yeah, I think in terms of the national conversation, Grant should absolutely be a part of it. And a big reason would be, well, he's a returning SEC Player of the Year, preseason SEC Player of the Year, and living up to that to this point, and he's on a team that's ranked in the top three in the nation. So, you know, with the way that works in terms of national attention, it's going to go to players that are on some of the best teams. I think if you look at players who are in the mix for, to be All-Americans this season, Hachimura at Gonzaga, well, one of the best teams in the country that he's playing for, lost at Kansas. Zion gets a ton of attention because of how good he is, but also being at Duke. So, terms of national attention, the Wooden Award, Player of the Year, I think Grant's a top 5 to 7 candidate there. If he is the best player in the SEC and Tennessee's the best team in the conference, then he'll continue to get more attention. And he's just been great. Just to talk about his performance and his development, he was playing at a very high level last year, and he's improved. I think everybody across the board has, and I think everybody's recognizing that right now. And Grant's not going to have a monster performance every game. Look at Missouri. He didn't play very well. Tennessee was still able to win by 24. That says a lot about Tennessee. But what Tennessee does offensively, when the Vols are playing their best, it's when a lot of what Tennessee does runs through Grant Williams. He's, to me, the MVP of the team, and he's one of the best players in the country, no doubt.
Josh, we'll end on a bad note, of course. the Lady Vols fall 4 straight, the first time they've lost 4 in a row since 1970, I believe. And Holly Warlick's quotes after the game are basically like, we just didn't play hard, we didn't have any energy, we didn't have any heart, we didn't have any effort. Not good quotes coming from a head coach that's embattled. What is the future for Lady Vols basketball?
It's a great question, and it is a very bad time right now because the non-conference play went well for the Lady Vols. Had one non-conference loss heading into SEC play. They've lost 4 straight, as you mentioned, and but the 3-game losing streak is the first time in more than 30 years. And the thought yesterday was, okay, Lady Vols should come out inspired because those 3 losses were all in close games. And then to have that kind of performance in a fourth quarter where you're outscored 26-10, so at the end where you still have a chance to come back and win the game, you fall flat. There have already been loud voices saying, hey, Holly Warlick's not getting the job done. This isn't good enough. Well, this is only going to add to that. So I don't know. It's the middle of the season. I would think that Philip Fulmer absolutely wants to see how it plays out. There was an extension given to her this past offseason, but this is not good enough. And the expectation was that Tennessee would take a jump from where it was last year. And over the last couple of weeks, the Lady Vols have taken a step back. And if it continues down this road, then it's only going to get harder for Holly Warlick as the head coach of the Lady Vols.
Josh, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. We'll chat next week. Thank you.
It sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Josh Ward joining us, as he does each and every Friday, from WNML in Knoxville. We'll come back, react to a couple of things he had to say, especially with the recruiting front with Jeremy Pruitt, and then we're going to get to the Tennessee Titans to kick off hour number 2 next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 A Game.
I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith because I got to go for faith. I got to have faith, the faith, the faith, baby.
Welcome you back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in, live from Kitchen Notes, Omni Nashville Hotel. Stop on by, grab a biscuit. The only person that really can't do that is Chase McCabe. He's back in the studios.
Mean-spirited.
Mean-spirited, man.
I take a little jab.
Rubbing the constable's nose in.
You know
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
Listen here.
Whoa.
You're gonna throw jabs out like while you can't hear, complaining about your headset and all this stuff.
Don't worry, we're gonna get to your haircut update in a minute. I know you're eager to tell the people about your little grooming experience.
We could take people behind the curtain a little bit. Nick, you are I don't know how to put this. You do have the
high
most
maintenance?
You do have the most
yes.
needs.
Yeah.
Of anybody when it comes to like microphone and headsets and like
hot tea.
Let's face it, Derek, and you know this as a receiver. Mm-hmm. When you want excellence, high maintenance comes along with it. You know, it's just part of the package. Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad.
Takes a lot of maintenance to be this good.
Exactly.
Hopefully, we get some good along with the bad, though, with Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, listen, there was a piece from SB Nation, and it needs to be taken sort of not too. It needs to be taken loosely, but it also is a sort of a warning sign for all college football teams. Listen, I'm a big, you know, you guys know I'm big into recruiting, and I do a lot of recruiting stuff for some other companies. And I think, you know, the way Butch Jones recruited at Tennessee was actually fairly impressive. He was doing things that Fulmer didn't even do when it comes to recruiting. 2 top 10 classes back-to-back nationally. I don't think it ever happened in school history. And he even in the top 5 one year. And I felt like there was a discussion all season that we didn't really truly know how much talent was on the roster. And, you know, listen, there are a lot of 4- and 5-star kids. They didn't pan out. Okay, does that mean there's talent, or does that mean they missed on recruiting? I mean, what does that mean? And based just strictly on the numbers, and again, that's a very dangerous way to evaluate any football team, but based strictly on the numbers, Tennessee was the fourth most underachieving program in all of college football this year. Florida State number one. They had the fourth best roster in recruiting. They finished 84th in the S&P Plus, which is Bill Connelly's rankings. And again, this is all off of SB Nation. They were 5-7. Louisville was the 32nd best roster in America. They finished 2-10, 111th in the nation. UCLA had the 15th best roster in America. They finished 3-9, 92nd in the S&P. And Tennessee had the 13th best roster in America. According to recruiting rankings, they were one of the top 15 teams in America when it comes to recruiting talent, and that's over the last 4 years. And I think that's about right. It doesn't guarantee success, and it doesn't take into account attrition. You know, you're going to lose some players here. This guy went early to the draft, or that player transfers. It doesn't take into account incoming transfers. So there is, again, you have to sort of take it for what it's worth. But to go 5-7 and to finish 13th, and to have the 13th best roster is disappointing if you're a Tennessee fan. And, you know, Derek, you've been on the side that there's not that much talent on this roster. I'm torn on it because they did recruit at a high level. And if your coaching staff is great, you'll maximize those players, even if we know they're not as good as their star ranking. So there has to be some gray area here, some middle ground where, you know, listen, Jeremy Pruitt gets credit for the win over Auburn. I think he gets credit for dominating a Kentucky team that was really good. I think it's almost a game. I'd prefer to go game by game and evaluate Jeremy Pruitt than go like roster, because it's not as simple as that. If you go game by game, you can point to some games where he did a really good job maximizing his talent. And then you can also point to a bunch of games where he did a terrible job maximizing his talent.
I think what happens is that's the easy way out. For SB Nation to tank, okay, we're just going to look basically at the numbers. We're not going to dive deep into anything. We're not going to do all the analytics. We're just going to say, okay, over the last 4 years, on average, where were you ranked, recruiting class? Okay, based upon that, we're not looking at anything else, but just based upon the stars, this is where you should be. You're ranked 13th overall, and you finish 5-7. Well, it was a disappointing season. Well, that's not always how it goes. That's the easy way to approach it. I think the more reasonable and logical way to approach it is, like you said, Braden, well, how many transfers did they have? How many guys got injured? You know, the coaching change. How does that affect, you know, the guys that were brought in 3-4 years ago, even 2 years ago? How does that affect the coaching staff now? So I wouldn't hold that against Jeremy Pruitt, because my thing was, he's only been – this is his first year.
They did get better by a game.
Yeah, and they did get better.
Two in the conference.
And the quarterback got better. The offensive line was beat up. The running back, you saw some improvement in that. The receivers made some improvement. They were making plays. So if you look at it, if you dissect it bit by bit, yes, this team, I believe, got somewhat better. Now, did the record indicate it? No, but – to say this was just, oh, well, the easy way to do it is what they did. Well, 13th overall, and y'all had a 5-7 record, so it was an underachievement. Well,
they were ranked.
Yes.
So they were ranked the 88th best team in America. And this is, again, Bill Connelly's rankings, who I actually trust a lot. He does a great job with this. But, again, North Carolina was number 5 on this list as the most underachieving team in college football. So Florida State, Louisville, UCLA, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Let's be very clear. Those 5 teams recruited at a pretty good level, and all 5 of them were garbage this year.
Yeah.
So stepping back from the numbers, those 5 teams were very disappointing based on their talent in general. The 5 overachievers, for example, Syracuse, Iowa, Virginia, and Utah. Those are the top 4 overachievers. Well, those teams did outperform their recruiting rankings.
So
they were really good teams, and they don't recruit at a high level.
But those 4 teams had what in common? I'm pretty sure their coach has been there more than a year.
Well, Iowa's coach has
been there forever.
Like,
exactly.
For like 19 years.
So you should factor that into it, where, yes, they overachieve, but their coaches have been there for at least 2 years. Well, so they know the program.
And their write-up, when they go into sort of the write-up explaining it, they don't really attack Tennessee much at all. He says in the article, he says Tennessee had fallen apart by the end of the Butch Jones era, and that explains some of the issues, which of course is totally true. I just think I find it interesting, and I think year one is interesting to evaluate the Vols, but I think we have to then tie it back to the Titans and tie it back to Mariota, which everything in this city now comes back to Mariota, it feels like. And it's because if we're going to evaluate Mariota strictly based on touchdown, number of touchdown passes he's thrown or number of wins, you can't say one thing for the Vols and then do something different for Mariota. You can't say, oh, no, we've got to go deep into the weeds and understand the subtleties and the nuances of the roster and Jeremy Pruitt's taking over and he didn't have this and the quarterback developed and the offensive line was garbage. If you're going to go deep into the nuances of the Vols and make excuses for one coaching staff, then you got to do the same thing for the quarterback of the Titans. You got to say,
it's not the same because Marcus has been here for going on 5 years now. So there's a body of work that we can look at. Well, Jeremy Pruitt, this was his first year. So, yes, the recruiting class was there. But I'm looking at it from the coach's aspect. I'm not looking at it from the player's aspect.
Well, but it's Vrabel's first year with offensive line injuries and the receiving core wasn't always great and lost a lane. All I'm saying is if we're going to use
the
gray area and sort of not just strictly numbers stuff, then you have to do it for kind of everybody in football. You have to say – yes, that is a factor, Derek. Mariota's been here for 4 years. That's a factor. Absolutely. He should be X, Y, and Z because he's been here 4 years. I'm just saying if you're going to go strictly – because there's a lot of fans that will just use, oh, he only threw 11 touchdowns this year. Oh, he had more interceptions than touchdowns last year. And if that's going to be the end of your analysis, you're missing so much more. Just like if all I say is, well, Tennessee was 88th in the nation in the S&P rankings and 13th in recruiting, that makes them one of the worst teams in America from a coaching standpoint. Well, no, it's not. You have to go deeper into the numbers is my point. You can't just take something on its face and say, well, that defines everybody. You got to go really deep into it, and that's why we talk about Delanie Walker's injury and the offensive line not being good and the changes in the offensive coordinators and, you know, on and on, scheduling getting tougher this year than last year. I just think it requires more nuance than just saying, oh, Marcus only threw 11 touchdowns this year. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fair, but I just think from that aspect, the professional level is a little bit different from the collegiate level. Now, if Jeremy Pruitt had been at UT for 3-4 years and, you know, this year was a 5-7 record, yeah, I would evaluate him the same way I would evaluate Marcus Mariota. But because Marcus has had, you know, 4 years going on 5 years of a body of work, then I think we look at him a little bit different, and the way we assess him is a little bit different than the way we assessed, you know, Jeremy Pruitt and his team. It's just like having a kid come into a class. Well, you know, if a kid's been, you know, in the class the whole year, and another kid comes in halfway through the school year, and they both take the same test, well, we're going to grade them. We're going to look at it a different way. We're going to grade them the same, but we're going to look at it a different way because we're going to say, well, this kid A, he had the whole year to kind of learn what we've been doing. And kid B, he's only had half of the year. So do we cut him a little slack because he or she only had half of the year? Probably so. And then the kid that's been there for a 4 year, we expect him or her to do better on a test because you've had the whole year to get this right as opposed to the kid that had half of the year.
All right, speaking of Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans, we're going to get back into that conversation when we come back. Yesterday we had Joe Banner on, the former president and general manager of the Eagles, now doing work with ESPN. He had some interesting takes on Marcus and the decision that John Robinson will have when it comes to a long-term commitment. We'll get back into that. We'll react to what he had to say. That's coming up next as we begin hour number two of Morning Drive, live from Kitchen Oats, the Omni Nashville Hotel, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.